Hi guys, each possession we hold dear is more than just an object. It's a tangible part of our story. And when we're gone, these cherished belongings remain, silently narrating the tales of our lives, demanding respect and honoring our memory. Our special guest today is Dwayne Scott Cerny, a renowned figure in the world of antiques and vintage, known not only for his vast knowledge, but also for his compassion and understanding of people's profound connection to their personal possessions. Now, as co-owner of the Broadway Antique Market and the acclaimed author of Selling Dead People's Things and Vintage Confidential, Dwayne has spent a lifetime curating stories, each tied to a unique item. He's mastered the delicate balance of honoring the past, the people, and their cherished possessions while helping them transition to new chapters of their lives. Today, we delve deep into that reality or non-reality, depending on if you're dead or alive. And we're going to have fun talking with Dwayne about all this stuff. So here we go. Dwayne, we're talking about dead people, live people, dead things, and real things today. How are you? And welcome to the show.
I am good. Thank you, Michael.
Oh, man. So talk to me. Tell me, like, what was your journey like getting from wherever you started? Because I know you've done music, you've done poems, you've done all kinds of entrepreneurial stuff, and you ended up in the world of antiques and vintage stuff. How did you get there?
You know, I you know how people can actually stalk another person, and how inappropriate that is. So I stalked an antique store.
Really?
I did. And it would be when I was doing my other jobs, my other businesses. On the weekends, I had this favorite store that I would go to. It was the Chicago Antique Mall, and it was the biggest antique store in the city. And I didn't have much money or know what I was looking at, but I would go there every weekend, and I was just amazed at it would just change. The place would change. It wasn't like going to Target where you go there and you see the same stuff all the time, right? You know, the end caps change, what's on sale. But yes. But and then just the traffic and the people, it was just, I was fascinated by it. And I befriended the owner's wife, and she said, we just started talking, and she said, oh, you know, what do you do? And I said, well, I write business plans. And at that time, I think I was doing something for the Navy Pier business plan. I did a business plan for Rambo Boys Clothing. I would put that out there.
Rambo as in like
Rambo's Boys Clothing. It wasn't my idea, but I was writing that. Anyway, so she said, would you do our marketing? And I was like, wow, that's cool. Yeah, I'd love to do that. And then she says, well, we don't have any money. Sounds familiar. And she said, but I can give you a booth in the basement. And as I now know, and I think pretty much everybody does, you know, in the vintage business, it's a house, a store, you want to go in the basement. If they gave me a garage, I would have taken the garage.
Is that true? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. You always want to go into the basement of any place. Absolutely. Okay. So start in the basement. Sleepers are going to be down there. So they gave me right at the foot of the stairs. So, you know, it's a really great spot. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I was thrifting things and selling things from my apartment, just dragging stuff over, trying to talk my mother into giving me stuff from her 50s apartment. My mother had all these new things, so she was no help at all. But, and months into that, I decided I am not good at this at all. I would sell stuff, but I didn't know what I was doing, and dealers were buying from me, which I was fine with, but I realized, you know, I was kind of a doofus. So the owner of the store, I said, I want to give my booth back. I just want to give it back. And she said, no, you're not going to do that. You need to help us with the marketing, because that was working. Mm-hmm. And they had a waiting list of people. And she says, you know, there's this guy up in Madison, Wisconsin. He wants a booth, but he can't manage it because he's managing a store. Vintage store up in Madison, Wisconsin. And she goes, why don't I get you guys together and just maybe that would work out. So I took a Greyhound bus up to Madison, Wisconsin. It took me 6 hours. Don't ask. Met him. He's funny and he was smart and he was really excited about doing something. And so we decided to like joint venture and buy things together. And I learned a lot from him because he was managing this store. And I'm like, you could make a lot of money in Chicago. And what we realized is what he was doing in Madison was that guy was selling to dealers in New York and LA. And I said, that's what we need to do. We need to get great merchandise, bring it to Chicago, and sell to dealers in New York and LA. So that that one little booth that we then we started paying for booths. We went, we'll take another booth, and within 6 months we had half the basement.
Really?
And we're making really good money. I mean, again, for you know, I'm 30 something at that point. Yeah, like crazy money. Which again, we're just spending like crazy people because we just need to buy more stuff. Unfortunately, the entire mall would go out of business because the owner wasn't paying the rent.
Oh,
we won't get into that. Yeah, it could be a problem. And so yeah. we're all getting kicked out. And Jeff, my business partner, and I, through just luck, there was a little storefront across the street, 1,500 square feet. And I said, you know what? It's a lifeboat. Let's rent it and let's move over there and we'll just keep the party going. Uh-huh. So we did that. And I think I asked a dozen dealers and nobody turned me down. Everybody said, yeah, I still want to continue to play. And we opened up the store and it was a tough 6 months. It just was not an easy, it wasn't like, hey, they're just going across the street, starting all over. It was just starting from scratch, which was a real lesson there. Uh-huh. But every year or so we take rent another store. So we rented one to the north, one to the south, then we took the basement. So then in 8 years we had 10,000 square feet. And we're really the kind of one of the first mid-century modern stores in Chicago, certainly of that scale. And then in 1998, it was 90 to 98, we bought a building up in Edgewater because the money we were paying, we were by the ballpark. Yeah. First store was by the ballpark. The rents are, it was like 10 grand a month for the rent.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Like, it's if you're selling liquor, it's good. but I'm not, you know, I'm selling vinyl and you know, vintage, ladies' underwear, you know, I mean, it's just, this is what we're doing. So we bought a building and I hired three moving companies to go 24 hours a day to move this entire place, knowing that at least one of them would quit. And one of them quit because it was moving the pyramids, I said, because yeah. it's thousands of things needed to be moved into this new store. And so that opened it. So that was Broadway Antique Market, which is where we are now. Mm-hmm. And now we're the... as you said, the oldest and largest vintage store, and my feet hurt.
God, amazing story, though. I mean, from nothing to a basement with a booth, mm-hmm. across the street, 1,500 square feet, bye, then get your own building, and now you're just booming. So, but inside the store, because I've seen pictures of it, and I've seen the video of inside the store, there's so much stuff. First of all, how do you know where everything is in the store?
Each case and each booth is a different person.
Okay.
And I always say I have 65 dealers and 100 personalities.
Right. Yes.
So you know, I know that this woman specializes in jewelry, or this guy specializes in World's Fair, or so. When someone comes in, though, I get I would say obscure questions, but somebody, where do I start? We had a guy who only collected 6-inch advertising rulers. Okay, where are those going to be? You know, so it's more of those kind of very, you know, specific things that people, you know, I want a kaleidoscope, you know, I want to, mm-hmm. and people can come up with, those are solvable requests. But, you know, somebody comes in to ask for a suit of armor. Yeah. How many suits of armor were there in Chicago? You know, I mean, we're...
I have a friend that actually bought a suit of armor. Yeah, I don't know where he got it.
Oh, yeah, okay. Somebody imported it, you know, yeah. Thinking from, I don't remember the armor war of Dallas. I don't remember that.
Yeah. So what is the craziest thing somebody's coming to us for? Is it a suit of armor or something else?
I think somebody wanted to buy a kidney once, but...
Oh my God!
There have been some strange ones. Oh, let's see. They often ask for things that just never existed.
Uh huh.
that's when sometimes people's creativity goes a little too far, you know? I have a chapter in one of the books, and it's about 100 things that people have asked for or asked about. And, you know, and people say, I'm looking for something I think is illegal to sell.
Okay.
You know, like that. Yeah. Although a segue into what we're going to talk about is a guy came in and said, my mother's having an estate sale. She just doesn't know about it yet.
Okay. Well, this is interesting. Now, the reason I love this subject, or I want to talk to you about this subject, is my parents both passed away in the last year. So we had this house full of stuff, right? And like, you don't usually, well, maybe sometimes you do if you're a kid, like rummage through your parents' stuff in their bedrooms or in the attic during all this kind of stuff. And you look at the stuff and you start to tear up and you go like, oh, this was my dad when he was young. This was my mom when she was first learning about nursing. And like when you buy stuff, are you going into people's houses? Are people bringing you things? And what are the attachments like when people bring stuff in? Are they like happy to get rid of it? Or is it like, I don't want to part with this and make sure it goes to a good family?
That's a good question. When people physically bring the items in, they've already created that detachment.
Okay.
Just by putting in a box and getting in the car and driving to this location and trying, I feel that like that's been part of the process that they just, and they also get to the point like, it's got to go. You know, I can't be lugging this around. Who wants to buy it? And or where can I donate it? So there's that. I think that's kind of a different experience. It is a different experience. When you're in the home, it obviously depends if like who you're dealing with. And it says a lot about the people in that. Sometimes you're dealing with the children. Of the person who's passed. Sometimes you're dealing with a living person who's downsizing. I think that's the most difficult.
Yes.
In that, and it's not a when it's one is that situation. There's no rushing through that. That's what the afternoon is going to be, right? And I always say, you know, just get ready for a lot of cups of mediocre coffee and some interesting stories, you know what I mean? And it's because it's just part of it. And I think that's why my business partner, Jeff, and I are good at this, too, is because the same thing. We both lost our parents, him somewhat recently, like you, mine a number of years ago. But we get it. We get it, and it's equally important that people feel that. I mean, just I'm going to say some of the examples will be like, well, this one, you know, I hear this one often. You know, maybe their father was like a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of lawyers, and this was his desk, right? And oh my gosh, the desk. You know, right. That, and it's important. I'm like, well, kind of a lawyer. What do you do? What do you represent? You know, and that, but that desk go to the right person. But that desk, and that's my job,
yeah.
Is to get them to understand that this is going to go to someone who's really going to cherish it, and it's going to go on, right? And without because privacy is a huge issue, and I'll often say, I said, if it's all right, I won't mention your father's name, but I'll, because people will want to know, what do you know about this desk? Mm-hmm. What do you know about this fill in the blank? And if I have an actual, I'm not going to make stuff up. But if I have an actual story, it's so much better. And actually, it helps sell the item because I could say, oh, you know what? This guy, he was a public defender, you know, here in the northern burbs. And, you know, he was a really great guy and, you know, people loved him. And this was his desk. Mm-hmm. A lot of good things passed across this desk.
Yeah. How do you separate the emotion? Because I will tell you, like when I was selling, not selling or giving away or trying to find places to give my parents stuff to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get people that come in and all they go is like, they see opportunistic and you don't want to give stuff to people like that. Like, right. how do you deal with that? Because people know that you're going to sell their stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, well,
probably profit from it and all this kind of stuff. So how do you deal with that, the emotional part?
Well, I don't behave in an opportunistic way.
Okay.
First. And I think it's just spending enough time with people that they're comfortable in selling to mm-hmm. us. And the first thing I always say is, like, you know, if you, you know, go through the house and please, whatever you're keeping, take it out of the house, get it into your house, 'cause it's now yours, mm-hmm. whatever you want to say. So that wheat from the chaff, selection is really, really important, because then they've decided the things that are there need to go. And not that it's going to be easy, but it's going to be easier, because it's not those, you know, any prized possessions. And then, of course, you're dealing with family. So Aunt so-and-so is going to take the sofa, and, you know, Uncle. Fine. You know, just, you know, what do you want me to look at?
Yeah. And then what kind of stuff would you rather buy and put in your store? And what kind of stuff is, like, not as, you know, it's not going to sell? Like, what is the stuff?
Well, we tend to specialize in Art Deco mid-century modern. So, which means 30s through, I can even go into the 90s if we're going to say, like, something's collectible or design oriented. And then there's things that are just, you know, I could just slander and say no French provincial. All right. It just doesn't sell. And somebody will go, we don't paint furniture. Everything's always, we just try to get things in the best condition as possible.
Yeah.
We're not refinishing. Other people do that. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's just not what we do. And we've got the business has really skewed so much younger over the past 10 years. So it's now, I mean, we get lots of college kids and people in their 30s. And so sometimes they're not even sure what they're looking at, because it's out of their experience. They didn't have, you know, what's a rotary phone, you know. Oh. You know, stick your finger in a hole and you turn it around. What? What
are you trying to say? Can you still use rotary phones anywhere? Like, can you connect it to a network?
Yeah. Yeah, you can. But for the most part, though, a lot of these things are, like, we call them, like, shelf sitters.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you want to have that decor. and vintage is a fashion. Vintage is very much a fashion. So, and again, it's what people buy reflects who they are. And then it becomes a part of their life. So when it comes to, like, because again, we sell vintage men's and women's clothing and jewelry, and it's really a department store. Yeah. So it can be almost anything. You want a toaster? We got a toaster. You know, you want a blender? You want a cocktail shaker? You know what it is. And so it reflects, though, what people are interested in. So I'd say that we try to buy things that are first of quality. Mm-hmm. First of quality. Second, that it's that we can actually, you know, make a profit on it. Always things that are unusual, because I've never seen one of those. And if I haven't, it's probably fairly scarce. Mm-hmm. Or I'm wrong. And sometimes I'm very often wrong. So I just have a feel for what, by this point, what's going to sell in the store. And again, there are some trends of things that are, you know, hot. And now it's certainly 80s and 90s. We sell so many vintage t-shirts, which I kind of don't get, but the dealers bring them in and the college kids buy them. And so I don't have to know a lot about it. I just have to know of it.
Are there things that you go into someone's home or estate and you see and you go, like, oh my gosh, I want that for myself. I'm never going to sell that.
It doesn't happen too often. Though I'll give the most recent one was, I was at an estate, and it was a couple that, woman, do you have Crate and Barrel in Dallas?
There probably is one. I don't get out of my
apartment. Is it CB2? I think there was, anyway. Yeah. So, but it was a woman who has worked for them like really early on when Crate and Barrel was getting started. And they had a lot of very smart design oriented people mm-hmm. around them. And again, a Chicago thing, there's so much creativity in Chicago. I'm going into Hugh Hefner and Playboy, and just there's a lot of art directors. So we go to this house, and this woman had just so much stuff from, again, not even the store, but like prototypes of things they were thinking of carrying at Crate and Barrel. I go, I've never seen that. But I walk in there, and she has a baby grand piano, which I did not want, but covering it was this fantastic textile. So she actually had like a slip cover made for the baby grand piano. And I walked in the door and I said, I want that. Uh-huh. And of course, Jeff said, what do you want that for? And I said, and actually now on certain podcasts, I use it as my backdrop.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fantastic textile. So that was when I walked in. I knew it immediately. But I had a purpose for it though. So it can't just be something, you know, decorative.
Gotcha.
I bought a couple paintings the last month from that were done of Riverview, if you're familiar with that, which is an early amusement park here in Chicago. I just thought they were so well done, and I hadn't seen anything done of that time. I don't buy a lot, honestly. I'm always more excited in selling. It might sound funny, but other people's things. Mm-hmm. I like selling my stuff, but I enjoy that because I know how important that is. In that, you know, we sell a sofa for somebody and then they say, great, that's my mortgage payment. You know, great, now that, you know, now I've got a little more money to send my kid to college. You know, it's paying people's bills. Yeah. So I realize how important that is. So
I see that as rewarding. I mean, it is like you buy the stuff and you're helping them out.
Yeah. For sure. And then the bigger picture, of course, is which younger people get, and they didn't, I'm going to say 20 some years ago, is that vintage is green. So we're keeping things, out of the landfills.
Dang. There's another great idea.
It just is. And it could be the smallest thing. And you go like, oh, no. if the condition's there, if it's not been ruined, we can resell that. And then it goes on. Years ago, I was selling, and people thought I was out of my mind, but we go into estates, and I'd pick up film canisters. You remember years ago when you did film?
What was actually
film? Well, you know?
Little butt things for the 35mm?
I'd be like a little Kodak.
I love those things.
Right? Little Kodak things full of film. Because I kept thinking, there's not going to be film. Mm-hmm. There isn't going to be film. it's going to become and now I can't even keep those in stock. I'd have tubs of them. And then why was because people would come in and again creative people, you know, holding it up, going like, oh wait, I can do something with. And people had all kinds of. I'm going to do a website on this family's vacation pictures, and I'm going to turn this into that, and this becomes a cover on an album. It's going on to all kinds of like repurposing these things, which absolutely is garbage. It was absolutely thrown out.
It's interesting though, and like I remember my dad has. Tapes that he did mm-hmm. when he was in Vietnam, and it's like they're what do you call it, reel-to-reel tapes,
audio
and
tapes,
got a reel-to-reel player, and I haven't like figured out how to thread the things yet, so I'm sending them off to Legacy Box so they can like put them on the digital for me.
That's great.
Because I have no idea how to do it, so but I have the tape player and I've got the record player.
Yeah, and now there's a way to save it. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's a lost history too. I mean, then you'll be able to hear his voice.
Yep.
Just how great is that?
I bought the Legacy Box. It's sitting in there, and I just got to throw stuff into it soon.
Yeah.
I love what you do. Like when you go into people's houses and they've got like multiple types of furniture. Do you look at it and go, it's weird, or it's cool, or does it go all one way, or all another way? Like what's the deal there when they've got so much eclecticism going on?
I think a lot of times it ends up being when I ask and it'll be, oh yeah, well this I inherited.
Uh-huh.
So I, you know, and I love it because this was my grandmother's whatever, you know, sideboard, and you're going, because it doesn't fit with everything else. But this I bought from a store, a vintage store, or this I bought new. I bought it new in 1977. So it's no longer new. So this, it's almost like every little piece has a story. Again, if you're dealing with someone that's there who can tell you about it, or a family member that, you know, remembers, what, you know, how did this end up there? My fascination is always, what does it all mean? Because I'm just like, okay, what is it? I can almost feel it, like the creativity in some of these states. So you could say eclectic, but I could also say this is someone who was very well read, and oh my gosh, like, you know, maybe there's hundreds of albums. You know, hopefully not polka music, because Chicago invariably you run into all these polka albums.
Yes.
There could be a website just for polka albums, I think, but then you just start to get a feel for who this person was by what they collected. I always say nothing got into your house by accident. Mm-hmm. You know, there was you inherited it, you bought it, someone gave it to you because they thought you would like it. I had a friend of mine, I actually did her estate, and that was very difficult doing someone's estate that you know. Mm-hmm. Put that out for that. When you don't have that connection, it's much easier. But she has been given monkeys, and
real live monkeys.
No, like a monkeys, but every kind of monkey you can have. A monkey tea set, salt and pepper shakers, a monkey cookie jar, monkey clothes, monkey furniture. I didn't know there was monkey furniture. There is.
I didn't know.
Monkey art. So the whole hundreds and hundreds of different, that was her, you know, she just liked monkeys. Uh-huh. There was a number of years ago, there was a kind of a really bad flu that came through Chicago for like over like a couple weeks. And a lot of people were getting it. This is pre-COVID, and unfortunately, she passed young. And her sister had contacted me, and it was like, oh, first off, the shock of it, and then it's like, well, we need you to sell all these monkeys. And I'd given her some of them, so she had vintage monkeys. So I had to sort the new ones from the old ones, and we donated the new ones, you know. And we kind of laugh in the store because we can. And I just gave her a showcase to put all our monkeys in. We don't have that many left, if we can, it's almost as if someone like one of my coworkers makes a reference to a monkey, not related to her, just bringing it up. And like within an hour, someone comes and buys a monkey.
So it's an ESP monkey thing. I like it.
I think it just puts the karma out there. I think I got a lot of things like that I don't have any answers to, but things that happen that are just like a beyond coincidences.
What do you want to have happen with all the stuff? Like, What's the goal that you have for all the things that you've brought in, other than making money for yourself, or what is it?
Well, what I love, because we've been doing this for so long, is people come in and they say, half my house is from your store. And I get, and they say, meaning them, get so many compliments on this dining room set. And I always just say, oh, well, you know, I bought it at BAM. And the fact that I've stumbled upon something where I can affect and have affected tens of thousands of people's lives, and actually with objects into their home. If I had any other type of business, I'm going to say like a coffee shop or something, wouldn't be that I sold somebody a cup of coffee and it affected part of their life, even in a small way. It's just a cup of coffee. Like you went to a restaurant, it's just one meal. But it's different if I've sold you art or a chest of drawers or a set of flatware, you know, something that you're seeing or using, you know, every day. And I love that because it's a kind of business that the objects go on. The objects go on and have their own lives. And I facilitate that. And it's purchased by people who loved it, People don't buy things they necessarily, you may like it, but if you really love it, then you buy it.
What kind of stories did you put in your book, Selling Dead People's Things? What are the stories like in there?
So all true stories of estates that I've been in involved with. Sometimes I purchased things, but there are stories in there where I ended up, I didn't, because they changed their mind. And actually, I think those are some of the more interesting stories. Mm-hmm. Very much Chicago stories. Many of them have a type of, when possible, like an O. Henry type ending, because I like writing things like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's a bit of a, I take you through the journey of what I've experienced as best I can. So you go on the house calls with me and meet these people. And I think it's something when I looked into it, there was a Brit in the 60s did a memoir about what it was like to be an antique dealer and going from market to market in the UK. But I couldn't find anybody who'd written anything here about the business. And because I think Americans were just so fixated on, Antiques Roadshow, great show. Mm-hmm. But I always found the backstory more compelling than what the value was or is, you know. So again, that's not always about, it's really not about money. It's not, selling dead people's things isn't a how to, as I point out.
Yeah.
Instead it's stories. I'll give you a quick one. I had a woman who would come in for many years. She'd buy things from us, and she would always buy things for her father for Father's Day or for his birthday. And she'd said, you know, we'd had kind of a tough year and she wanted to get him something like just extra, extra special. And I was like, okay, well, tell me about him. Gift ideas. And she mentioned all kinds of, you know, different things. He likes the Cubs and, you know, whatever. And he's retired and he can't give him a cocktail shaker. He can't drink anymore. And these things. And then she says, which was like, sit down for this one. Right. She says, well, you know, he was an incubator baby. And I was like, okay. Oh, wow. And I said, how old is he? Right. And she goes, well, actually, he was an incubator baby at the Century of Progress. Now that's where that technology, that and on the East Coast, Coney Island, okay. Coney Island, same guy, introduced the technology of incubating for babies, and hospitals wouldn't accept it as a science, and so preemies just died. Died. But he came up with, and again, no jokes here, but it's the chicken and the egg. It was basically, it's that technology of, you know, of what it would take. But he also realized he could make a buck on this. So, you know, so it cost you like a quarter or something to see the preemie babies at the Century of Progress. Now, you could say, oh, how exploitive this was. But actually, I think it's something like 70% of those babies survived that they just wouldn't have. And no hospitals would take them. So her father was an incubator. So I'm like, I got it. I said, give me a couple of weeks. And I contacted a guy I know who's a World's Fair specialist. And he got the item for me. And I had her come in. And it was a black and white postcard. Uh-huh. And it was of all these nurses, very stern nurses, with these oversized hat, the shoulder pads. Yeah, really serious nurses, because this is 1933. But they did this also for the juxtaposition of these giant nurses and these tiny babies, right? There, in the incubator. So it was a postcard from the incubator exhibit, right? So she gave it to her father, and he burst into tears. Oh. And he said, this is where I'm from. This is who I am.
Now, see that. I'm gonna try not to tear up too much. That is a story that just like it just makes you tear up. It's like that's beautiful.
And I didn't charge it for the postcard. I want to point that out. I always want to point that out. And when she wanted to pay for it, I said, you know what? I get to tell this story for years because it's just too perfect. That's how important vintage things are. Now, admittedly, that's an odd situation, but it would be
behind that story is just like. That's phenomenal.
No,
that
I gave
is doing the whole business.
So that's again, the Reader's Digest version of the story, but there's some, you know, 30 or 40 stories in there, and some are have a paranormal bent because it's just things that happen that I don't really understand, but I tried to, you know, document it. There's a story in there about the Iroquois Theater Fire, which is one of my favorite stories, because it so moved me. And don't want to really give that one away, but there's very little information about that. And for this to be it was a great grandchild of someone whose great grandparents survived the fire. And that, to me, that was almost like newsworthy. Mm-hmm. And the object was the stage bill from that performance. That was the object. And then that object told the story because they left it intermission. Because great grandma had this bad feeling, and she said she called it a blackness. And as she's telling me the story, I'm going like, okay, that's it. This sense of foreboding. And even though they had really good tickets, and grandpa was very upset that he wasted this money, and then she wants to leave, and it's so human. I mean, a horrible tragedy, yeah. horrible tragedy. And there's the program. Which she wouldn't sell to me. After she told me the story, she wouldn't sell it to me. She just kind of realized it was kind of the burden. She felt the it was a burden to have it, but she also couldn't sell it.
Has there ever been a time when somebody actually has sold you something and then they come back a week or two or a month later and they go like, "Man, I really want that back. I can't believe I got rid of it."
No, that's never happened. I did have a kid come in once and say there was a kind of a chalk framed painting of a old bearded man, and the kid said, "Oh, that's my grandfather." And I was like, "Oh, that's everybody's grandfather, you know?" Uh-huh. "Oh, please, no, I know it. And I said, "If you could prove it's your grandfather, I'll give it to you." And sure enough, a couple of weeks later, he came back with pictures of him, and darn if it wasn't him. I said, "Well, there goes $200, you know, off the wall." And I just gave it to him. So because things float around, things do float around.
You know, the thing is, I think your store, almost more than any other type of store I can think of, is like about relationships, right? Mm-hmm. And about feeling and emotions and getting people what they really want. You know, I mean, yeah, you can go down to Ethan Allen or you can go somewhere else and buy furniture, but it's not that same kind of feel, right?
No. I always say that, you know, how the expression that people say, they say, "Well, why did you buy that?" And you'll say, "Well, it spoke to me." Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What does that mean to you?
You have a feeling about it. It's just
that
thing.
Yeah, but how is it possible that, you know, a thing, a mm-hmm. little box, how does this little box speak to you? Well, it did, though. Mm-hmm. It did. I've had people countless times, more than I can enumerate, and say, "I don't know why I'm buying this, but it spoke to me."
I, you know what? You just brought up something, by the way. I don't know if you do or don't believe in ghosts or spirits, but like, what's your thinking about?
Oh, that? I do now after having written the book. Uh-huh. But yeah, I do. Just because there's been too many things that have crossed my path, and I don't mean like necessarily. I feel it's just, like when I talk about an object, I really refer to it as an energy. Uh-huh. I mean, we're all just energies, you know, we're all zeros and ones. Right. Yeah. I often feel it's like that item picked you. You didn't really pick it. Cause when people say, "I don't even know why I'm buying this, but I like it. I have to have this." It's just, again, it spoke to me. I think in a way it spoke to them. It spoke to them. Now, I don't think the same is true for, like, you know, buying groceries and picking out a head of lettuce. You know, which, you know, want to say that. But I think this works on a whole level that we don't necessarily understand, and that items can absolutely have an energy to them. Mm-hmm. I think things that were important to the person. I think that's why sometimes jewelry has that reputation. Dolls do, you know, I think more than they probably should, but there's just so much energy that's put into it, or love and feeling. And it doesn't really escape. It stays with the object till the next person loves it.
Wow. Yeah. By the way, dolls scare me. Yeah.
I'm not a fan. I do believe in that, but it's also, you know, humans tend to see faces in everything.
They do. Right?
You know, there's a wall socket. You know, it's a face. You know, there's faces all over the place.
Yeah. Dolls that like can close and open their eyes.
Yeah.
Not in the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep that in the house, Chucky.
I'll keep that in mind. But yeah, there've been enough things, and then talking to people and hearing their experiences. And there's some things that just, again, that's part of the title of the book, was inexplicable. You know, I can't explain it. I'm just going to relate it to you. And the first book has a few ghost stories in it, just by nature of the business.
Do you think there's like ghosts in your store, or do they stay with the furniture, or they stay in the old house? Like, what do you think?
Oh, no, well, kind of two different things. I can't say recently that we've had anything that's caused any kind of a commotion. We did once, and that was rather an unpleasant experience. The store itself is from 1939. And during the war, it was converted. The upstairs was converted into apartments.
Uh-huh.
And any number of people have commented, and it's usually young women. They'll say that they feel someone's watching them, and they'll say, "Has anybody else said this?" As soon as they start with that, it's something like, "Yeah." And it's always in the same spot. And I've had odd things happen. Just like, it's usually when we're closing, and the there'll be this horrible crash. That was the one that really almost crapped my pants. Sorry. This horrible crash. It's closed. We're closed. There's nobody here. And I'm turning off lights and all this. And oh my God. Well, I'm thinking, well, a mirror fell off the wall. I mean, you could not make a sound that big. Yeah. Right. And it sounded like it was right next to me. And there's nothing. There was nothing. My store manager, who does not believe in any of this stuff, said that one day he was closing up, and he heard his voice. Someone called out for him as if he was there. And it always tends to be in the same part of the store that was an apartment at one time.
Wow.
So I think it's just a residual thing. I don't really, there's nothing, but so many people have mentioned it that it's probably, that's probably true, but I don't think this is anything like leftover from like an object or a, you know, we sold a chess set, and the rook is still hanging around. You know, I don't think that. I don't want anybody dismissing the other things I'm saying because of that. But there's just been enough odd stories that people tell me.
I think that's fascinating, like truly fascinating. And when I get to Chicago again, I'm going to come by and we'll just sit close to where that spot is. But
close to that, and I'll have the doll right there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. Right
sit
there.
Down, Chucky. All right. This has been fabulous. I want to go and learn more about you. Let's do some more. We've done this before when you were on last time, and it was like so fun. And I would like to try and do it again. We're going to play a game of this or that. I'm going to give you two choices. You can pick one or the other, but not neither or both. And if you have to explain yourself, we'll let that go too. We can let you explain yourself. Okay. So we'll start easy and they'll get harder as we go. Now this is a good question just for me. Vintage or antique? Are they different or the same thing?
I think vintage is now our modern word for antiques.
Okay, vintage is the word for what used to be old, then turned antique, and now it's vintage. Got it. Family heirloom or newly bought items?
Oh, family heirloom.
Okay, writing or selling?
Writing.
Okay, city antiques or rural antiques?
City.
Okay. What's the coolest city antique that you've bought?
Ooh.
Like, I would love a lamppost.
Oh, you mean like, you mean like a street sign city?
Maybe. So, I mean, I'm just asking questions, right?
Okay, sorry. City, you know, why is it city? Because it's because there's so much creativity in a city. Mm-hmm. And those kind of people have really interesting things. Not the people in the burbs or the country don't, but kind of more design oriented, and that's where I'm coming from. So,
okay,
long How answer.
Restore damaged antique or keep it as is?
Oh, keep it as is.
Okay. Sell a valuable item to a stranger or less valuable item to a collector?
Oh, less valuable item to a collector.
Okay, yeah, like monkeys or something.
Did that?
Okay, 50s memorabilia or 70s memorabilia?
I'm old. 50s.
50s?
Yeah.
What's the oldest thing you ever got and sold?
Oh, we have some things from 16th century Vietnam bowls and that have been unearthed from a Vietnam vet, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dealing with an overcrowded attic or a cluttered basement?
I'm going to say I like the basement because there are raccoons in attics.
That's like completely random.
You get, there's birds in attics, there's attics, there's fish and fowl are up there. That's good.
Okay. Let me see. How about help a family find closure or discover an incredibly rare item?
Oh, yeah. Oh, help a family find closure for sure.
Okay. Let me see. Recover a stolen antique or discover a forgery?
That's a good one. I think discover a forgery.
That would be interesting. Like, what if we found the Constitution
as a
forgery, right?
Only because that not anything is valuable, but oftentimes we find things and going, it's not real. You know, but you got to be honest, and it's better to know because, gee, what a mess.
It is. Preserve an item for posterity in a museum or sell it to an enthusiastic private collector.
You know, I'm going to go with the collector again.
Okay. Yeah. Keep it out there and keep it in someone's possession.
A lot of times people donate things to museums and then they just have a sale of their own. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I never really thought about this. So museums don't keep everything they get. They can't.
So it's something. Space.
Okay. What about let go of a personal heirloom or keep an item with a sad story?
Wow. That is. I'll go with the first one.
Let go of a personal heirloom. Okay.
Yeah.
What about discovering an item's controversial past or remain ignorant of it?
Oh. Just discover the past.
Yeah. Is there another story that can be written there, right?
Absolutely. There's no sense of being ignorant about anything.
is there ever a story that you've discovered that you wish you didn't know?
A story?
Yeah. There's something you found and you go like, oh man, I wish I didn't know that. That's how it happened.
I would say, though, it often has to do with more the maybe either the nature of someone's passing or, you know, I mean, there's been situations we often get stumble into animal rescues when you do these things, and we do what we can, and you kind of have to have a little network for that, and sometimes it doesn't work out because you didn't get there fast enough or whatever. So that was make me sad.
Here's one last one. Spend the day in the past with the original owner of a cherished antique or in the future with the person who will treasure it next?
The future. Yeah.
Where it's going?
See where it's going. Keep it going.
Yeah. What's a piece of yours that you have and you're going like, I want to give this to grandchild, you know, friend. Like you go like, this really means something to me and I'm going to give it to someone that means something to me.
Yeah, I always try to think of like, because something means an object may mean something to me and it just won't mean anything to them, mm-hmm. you know, or then I know that there's a person that they don't like clutter. And so then I'm just giving them clutter, even though I'm like, hey, you know, it's a piece of Stephen Sondheim sheet music or something. You're a big Sondheim fan, you know?
Sheet music, yeah.
Right? You know, like, why wouldn't you want that? Well, it's also like giving somebody a gift and you think they're really going to like it. And then it's like, you know, rant.
Yeah. Oh, man. I have to think about that myself. Like,
that's a tough one.
It is, because you're right about this whole thing about it means something to you because of the events around it.
Yeah.
And you give it to someone else and it's like, it's just a plate.
Well, and it'd be like if it's, I don't know, if I gave something to somebody and then it's going to be, well, then they can remember me by that, mm-hmm. you know. But here's going to say, you remember me by looking at a cat.
There you go.
Visiting. There's Mustasha. Yes. The door's closed. I don't know how you got in here. So it'd be like if they needed that to remember me by, I don't know. I you know, that's the tagline of selling dead people's things is everyone is at a estate sale waiting to happen.
Oh my god.
So but kind of the qualification of that is not everyone is a good estate sale waiting to happen,
mm-hmm.
or a great one.
Yeah, it takes a long time to go through stuff. I think I could probably get with you, probably a lot of people get with you on like how you ought to prepare to get rid of stuff before you have to get rid of it. You
know? Yeah.
There's a whole business out there for that.
There sure is. But it does feel good to give things away. It feels really good to and again, to I always put this out there, to reputable charities that actually get things to people who need them.
Yeah.
You know, refugees and things, you know, like that. Not politically related cults. And I won't name which charity that is, but, you know, hopefully there's a salvation for me in the future.
Okay. Cult leader. Here we go. I want people to stay in touch with you for sure. We've got your sellingdeadpeoplesthings.com, which you can go check out. You also have vintageconfidential.com, and of course, where the ghosts hang out, bamchicago.com.
And I'm on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok, so you can I'm everywhere, just track me down.
You are everywhere. I love the discussions that we've had, so we just may have to figure out how to have some more, whether they're online or offline. We'll figure it out.
I totally agree. Okay. Such fun.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody, for watching. And Dwayne, hold on, and we'll talk in just a second. Bye, everybody.